Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review was heard nationally on 29 AM and FM radio stations 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 70 countries worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on 5 new ways for your bank to steal from you right after this message. Back in 1787, the writers of our Constitution put in this clause at Article 1, Section 10. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt." That clause follows a biblical injunction on just weights and balances that we see in Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. Now, private business is carried on in gold and silver coin. Public business is conducted in commercial paper. Commercial paper like stocks, bonds, Federal Reserve notes, credit, credit cards, debt, and usury. Well, back in 1965, Congress told us that there is no difference in the value of gold and silver coin and clad coin or currency. And that's very true when we're dealing with banks, government, and commercial industries. But out here in the real marketplace, there's a 7-to-1 difference in purchasing power and a 7-to-1 difference in taxes due on that paper money versus gold money. Now, God and our founding fathers did not give us gold and silver coin for no good purpose. They knew that as a matter of law, gold and silver coin was absolutely necessary for us to deal in order for us to establish our property rights. Well, neither did our Congress and politicians take our gold and silver coin away from us for no good reason either. They knew, and they knew full well, back in 1933 when they did it, that in order for them to subjugate a free people, they would first have to take away their gold and silver coin, to take away the people's right to property and to destroy their property rights. Now, if you and I intend to regain our rights, duties, and capacities, then we must first regain our property and property rights, because property is the legal foundation for all of our liberties. Now, let me teach you how to do just that, and this business school is now on compact disc for adult home schooling. For more information about my private business school, just call and order my free general law CD package. Now, that's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general, and it's informative, entertaining, it's educational, and it's free of charge. And you can call and order yours right now. That number is 417-273-4967. And my business school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, go to the website georgegordon.org or click onto the email and send me an email and ask for that free general law CD package. That's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. Well, a new law makes canceled paper checks a thing of the past. You can say goodbye to the float and the chance to stop a transaction or spot forgery. Your bank is about to make some pretty radical changes to your checking account. These are changes that could cost you a lot of money in bounced check fees and limit your ability to fight fraud or errors in case your ID is stolen. These alterations are so significant, in fact, that it may be time to abandon your checking account and paper checks altogether if you haven't done so already. So far, though, very few banks have signaled to their customers what's coming. Loopholes in the law mean that many customers may never receive any formal notification of this new legal revolution in checks. Now, it's all part of a sweeping modernization law known as Check 21, passed last year by Congress and signed into law by President Bush. In a nutshell, the law frees banks from having to handle paper and instead allows the bank to process electronic images of your original checks. The new law, which takes effect at the end of October, is expected to, one, virtually end the float. Checks will be processed in a matter of hours, not days. Technically, checks could zip through the system in a matter of seconds, but the huge volume of checks will slow things down a bit. The average time between writing a check and that check being paid, it's a period known as the check's float, is expected to drop from the 2 to 4 days that's typical now to less than 1 day. Now, if you've gotten into the bad habit of writing checks before a deposit hits your account, you'll need to knock that off or you'll wind up incurring a fortune in bounced check fees. Second, they want to make it tougher to stop checks. With such fast processing times, it'll become harder for you to prevent a check that you've written from being paid. So if a door-to-door salesman pressures you into buying magazines, for example, and then later you change your mind, you may have just a few hours to enter a stop payment notice with your bank to keep the check from clearing. Third, end your right to get back your canceled checks. So any bank along the processing chain can decide to turn your paper check into an electronic image and then discard the original. Canceled checks that are imaged this way won't be returned with your statement and you will not be able to get them from your bank. What you may get back with your statement are what's known as substitute checks. These will be paper copies of the electronic images made of your originals. So said John Hall. He's a spokesman for the American Bankers Association. Banks that aren't already processed or to process electronic images will be presented with these substitutes, which can be returned to the customer. Then fourth, they'll give you limited recredit rights. With most other electronic transactions, you get a right of recredit. If you spot an error or a fraud, the bank must put the money back into your account within 10 business days. The bank can take the money back out again if its investigation determines that you were wrong or that you'd made an error. But now, for the first time, this right will be extended to checks, but only if a substitute check has been provided to you. So said the Consumers Union attorney, Gail Hillebrand. And if you get back your original, or if you don't get anything back from the bank, Hillebrand said, the recredit right doesn't apply to that transaction. Now, she believes this right is so important that consumers should try to preserve it when they can. And she recommends monitoring your accounts carefully to spot suspicious transactions. And if you don't get back the original check or a substitute, request that a substitute be issued to ensure your right to have the amount recredited to your account while the bank investigates. Now, charging you for substitute checks will be a new bank charge. The good news is that substitute checks have all the legal standing of an original check. If the IRS wants you to back up a deduction in an audit, for example, presenting your substitute check will be just as good as presenting the original. Now, the IRS has long accepted bank-issued copies of your originals if you don't routinely get them back with your statements. Banks keep check images for 7 years on microfilm. Now, the bad news is, Hillebrand said, is that there doesn't seem to be any limits on what banks will be able to charge you for these substitute checks. And also, if the original check was forged, you may have a tougher time proving it, she said, since you'll be working from an electronic picture of your check rather than the real thing. And forgery experts often use variations in pen pressure or ink color to prove fraud. You won't have the original. That will have been destroyed. And here's something else. If you don't currently get your paper checks back with your statement, and about 60% of check writers or check customers today do not, according to the American Bankers Association, especially since our institution started charging extra for the service. Your bank legally doesn't have to notify you of those charges. So this means billions in savings for the financial institutions. Are they going to pass the savings on to you? No, you can bet your sweet life that they're going to charge you while they take the profit. Here's why. What's happening? Well, the banks have realized for a long time that electronic check processing would save them money. In fact, it'll save them about $2 billion a year. But this electronic revolution was speeded along by September 11th terror attacks, which grounded air traffic and delayed processing of millions of paper checks for days. Well, under current law, financial institutions typically need to return the paper checks to the banks on which they're drawn in order to be paid. Checks that need to travel long distances typically go by air. No planes, no out-of-town check processing. So given that banks process about $200 billion in checks every business day, this was no small hiccup. This transformation of check processing was all but inevitable in the electronic age, given the changes. It's probably time to put away the checkbook and switch to more efficient means of payment. For example, use a debit card rather than a check for in-person transactions. Debit cards are covered under Regulation E, which gives you that all-important right of recredit. If a mistake is made in the transaction, the bank has to resolve the problem or put the disputed amount back in your account within 10 business days. The exception now, if the card will be out of your sight, hand over a credit card instead. It's too easy for a crooked employee to use a skimmer to take enough information off of your card's magnetic stripe to create a new card. Banks will restore any money stolen this way within a few days, but in the meantime, you may have to live with an empty checking account. Better to have the fraud charged to a credit card where you won't be required to pay the disputed amount. And then use automatic debit for recurring bills. Many people resist signing up for this incredibly convenient service, which allows merchants and lenders to take their payments directly and automatically from your checking account. But you actually have more rights under Regulation E to deal with any errors related to this automatic debit than you do when you write a check. So now that the float will be a thing of the past, you might as well take the easy road. You also won't have to worry about late fees and other penalties for missing any due dates. The exception, telephone and wireless bills. You might want to put recurring payments on a credit card that you pay in full each month, so that you don't have to pay interest on the card, since people tend to have a lot of disputes with their phone companies. Hillebrand notes that also make sure to sign up for overdraft protection linked to a savings account or line of credit. That way, you won't bounce any checks if you miscalculate your balance. And then finally, consider secure online bill payment. Some people are leery of online bill payment, given the prevalence of phishing, spelled P-H-I-S-H-I-N-G, that's identification theft, and Trojan horse programs designed to steal your account ID and passwords. So keep thieves out of your bank accounts. Others of us are sold on the convenience and again on the Regulation E protections that electronics payments provide us. If you use online bill payment, take steps to keep yourself safe, such as not using public computers or wireless hotspots for financial transactions and keeping your antivirus software up to date. I haven't had a checking account since 1980. I've gotten along quite nicely without it. Nobody steals my ID, and I don't have these kinds of problems, and I don't pay any interest, and I'm not paying any bank fees. But if you're wedded to the bank, caveat emptor. All right, hang on. We'll be back with more on how the banks steal from you right after this. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in both the United States and worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Gordon Law School and The Law Hour, please go to my website at georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. And the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school and is open to individuals by prearrangement only. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. Now, for more information, just go to the homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. All right, here's the second way for you to be ripped off or robbed by your bank. So don't be duped by bounced check protection. There's an important difference between bounce check protection and overdraft protection. Listen to this. Banks across the country have adopted a tricky new type of overdraft plan, and it has connected with it huge fees to cash in on Americans' bad money habits. And get this, you may not even know that you've been automatically enrolled in this bounced check protection program. Now, at first, Lois Y. thought Washington Mutual's new bounced check protection plan was a godsend. She didn't have to sign up for a line of credit or pay an annual fee. And if she wrote a check that was too large for her balance, she needn't face the embarrassment of a bounced check or pay any merchant fines. The bank simply covered the check and charged her a flat $22 fee. Then Lois faced some financial setbacks and started relying on bounced check protection continuously. In 1 year, she paid Washington Mutual more than $4,000 in these fees. "This has truly snowballed on me," said Lois, whose last name is being withheld to protect her identity. "Financially, things are tight in the first place, and the charges on top of this makes it impossible to start becoming financially solvent again." Also known as courtesy overdraft, bounced check protection plans are a new and very profitable twist on traditional overdraft protection. Traditional overdraft protection allows a consumer to prevent bad checks by drawing on a savings account, a line of credit, or a credit card. Now, more than 1,600 financial institutions, mostly smaller community banks and credit unions, now offer such plans. Automatic enrollment means huge fees for the banks. Now, when you contrast the traditional overdraft protection with the new courtesy overdraft or bounced check protection, it uses the bank's money instead of the consumer's money or credit line. They do that to cover the checks that exceed the consumer's balance up to a certain amount. So they'll give you an amount, $100, $1,000, $5,000, whatever it is. And in addition to the per-check fee, some banks tack on a daily fee of $2 to $5 until the checks are made good. Now, consumers must pay the money back within 2 to 4 weeks or risk facing collection action. Other ways that bounced check protection is different from overdraft protection includes it's automatic. Banks typically extend the service to some or all of their customers who must opt out if they don't want the coverage. With traditional overdraft protection, customers have to sign up. You may already be enrolled and don't know it. So you're going to have to find out from your bank and then tell them, take me off the plan. And remember, it's discretionary on the bank's part. The bank decides whether or not to cover a check. The consumer never knows for sure if the check is going to be honored. With overdraft protection, the consumer signs a contract with the bank, and it's typically obliged to honor your checks that are under the plan's limit. And third, it's very costly. Traditional overdraft protection comes with a $10 to $50 annual fee. And users typically pay regular credit card or line of credit interest rates on any balances owed. With bounced check protection, the fees that the banks charge, $25 per check, is average. $25 per check that you overdraft. Although some go as high as $40 a check. Now that will translate into an annual percentage rate of 200 to 500% or more. 2 to 500% interest. Now if these sound like the rates of high-cost payday lenders, that's not a coincidence. You see, the banks watched as a $25 billion a year payday loan industry built huge profits, catering mostly to low-income people who couldn't make their check stretch to the next payday. Some banks eventually allied with a payday lender, and at least 1,600 have adopted bounced check protection as a way to cash in on Americans' inability to manage their money. Now, banks hold the cards, and they can boost your risk. Banks, of course, have some advantages over payday lenders. Besides having a captive, already enrolled audience. First of all, the banks don't have to disclose the cost. While payday lenders are required to tell the borrowers the annual percentage rates of their loans, the banks do not have to face you or any similar disclosure for bounced check protection. It's costing you 2 to 500%. You don't know it, and they don't have to tell. Banks can pad your account, and some banks add the bounced check protection limit to the amount actually in the customer's account when the customer inquires about his or her balance. So let's suppose you actually have $100 in your account. Then your ATM or online inquiry will show a balance of $200 to $1,100 depending upon the bank's bounced check protection limit. So if you rely upon this balance and then you write a check or you take too much out of your ATM with your credit card, you then incur the protection fee. Banks can increase the odds that you'll bounce a check. You see, many banks process checks in order of size, with the largest ones being cleared first. Banks say they do this because larger checks tend to be a consumer's most important, like your rent or your car payment or your utility payment. Critics suspect it's just a ploy to boost profits, since banks can charge a per-check fee for all the smaller checks that subsequently bounce. So exactly how much the banks are earning from these plans isn't clear. Fees in general, including bounced checks and ATM charges, have become a big profit center for banks, generating more than half of the total bank income. According to R.K. Hammer, Investment Bankers, which research banks and credit trends, banks prey on the unsophisticated consumers, Americans who have been dumbed down and are unable to count. And the banks that offer bounced check protection say it's extremely popular with consumers who appreciate having their checks honored and not having to pay merchant penalties that average more than $25. We're saving people the cost of the return check fee, and consumers by and large appreciate that, said Libby Hutchison, the Washington Mutual spokeswoman. Consumer advocates say that banks that offer bounced check protection are preying on low-income and unsophisticated consumers by heavily marketing the programs without revealing their true cost. They entice you to overdraw your account and then make you pay fees as if you've done something wrong and the bank is stepping in to save your bacon. Or so said Jean Ann Fox, the Director of Consumer Protection for the Consumer Federation of America. Now, critics demand a disclosure. The CFA and other consumer advocates believe the bank should be forced to notify consumers that a less costly option called overdraft protection is available. Now, you ought to write that down. One is called overdraft protection. The other is called bounced check protection. And boy, there's a world of difference. 200 to 500% difference. What you're looking for is overdraft protection, which you sign a contract with the bank. And they'll take the money out of your savings account, checking account, or give you a line of credit, and then charge you interest on the money that you borrow at bank rates, not $25. Picture this. You could go in and buy a pair of tennis shoes for $50 or $80 and write a check. The check bounces. And they charge on average $25 for that bounced check. Let's suppose that you wrote 10 checks. You pay your rent, you pay your car payment, and you have several little checks, $25, $30, $40, $50 each. All of the little checks, 5, 6, 7 of them, bounce and it costs you $25 for each bounced check. If you have overdraft protection, that's a contract. The amount of money that you borrow to cover those bounced checks will be charged at 10 or 15% interest, not $25 per check. So a $25 check will be charged 15% interest, and if you pay that in a month or two, it'll cost you a dollar or 50 cents or something like that. But if you take the bounced check protection, it'll be costing you 2 to 500% instead of 10 or 15%. They also want banks to disclose the annual percentage rates of bounced protection transactions and to provide consumers with a written contract outlining the loans, rates, and terms. Now, these banks are the only creditors in the country, Fox said, who are making loans without giving comparable cost information and without giving consumers a contract. So far, the advocates aren't making much progress with bank regulators. The Federal Reserve has proposed that bounced check plans be regulated under the Truth in Savings Act rather than in the more strict Truth in Lending Act that would require APR disclosure, among other restrictions. In the meantime, you should take steps to protect yourself, including opting out. If you're not sure whether your bank has enrolled you in its bounced check protection plan, which you don't want, bounced check protection, cancel that. You might have missed the glossy brochure advertising this service. Call and ask. You should be able to get the coverage removed if you specifically request it, then follow it up in writing. Sign up for real overdraft protection. These programs, which connect your checking account to a savings account, credit card, or line of credit, are a much more cost-effective way to guard against bounced checks. And get some budgeting help. If you're constantly in danger of bouncing your checks, you may need to brush up or learn some basic money management skills. And you'll find plenty of information on budgeting at this site, and you'll also find it here at our school. Remember, we teach a business school here, and we'll show you how to do business in gold and silver coin and get out of the banks altogether. Banks are there to take your money. Look at the woman who spent $4,000 in fees in 1 year. Wouldn't you rather have the $4,000 in your own pocket rather than paying that out to the bank to keep track of the money that you should learn how to count yourself? Why don't you call the law school and ask for my free general law CD package? Remember, that is free. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the law school direct. It's 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Or go to georgegordon.org, click onto the email, and send an email request. Stand by. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Tonight we're talking about five new ways that Congress has given your bank to steal from you. But before we get back to that, we Americans talk a lot about private business, don't we? And we use terms like private ownership, private property, and private rights. But we also use terms like stocks, bonds, negotiable instruments, licenses, and permits in our pursuit of profit and gain in our business transactions. Well, listen to this. Did you know that stocks and negotiable instruments are the exact opposite to private ownership? Bonds are the exact opposite to private property. Public business licenses are the exact opposite to private rights. And permits are the exact opposite to private business. And why is it that we see small business being subjected to such a constant barrage of attacks by government at every level, from Washington to your hometown? And what can you do to protect your life, your liberty, and your property from these incessant attacks by government agents and agencies like OSHA, the EPA, the State Tax Commission, zoning and planning, the IRS, and the swarms of government agents and agencies who are eating out your substance? Well, you know, there's a lot you can do. And the first step is to inform yourself as to the legal alternatives that you have between public business and private business. Now, if you'd like to learn more about private business, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package and let me tell you more about what it is that you're not supposed to know about private business. It's educational, it's entertaining, informative, and best of all, it's free. You can call and order yours right now. Call 417-273-4967. And if you're online, you can go to the website georgegordon.org, click onto the email, and request your free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. Alright, the third way that banks have been authorized by Congress to steal from us is, who's watching your bounced checks? Are you overdrawn? Well, your name could end up in a national database warning away bankers and lenders. Now, here's what you can do about that. Irresponsibility breeds consequences, and too many traffic tickets, and you're going to lose your driver's license. Too many wrecks, and your insurance company will drop you like a hot potato. Well, now the same thing is true of your checking account. If you write too many overdrafts, your bank may close your account with cause, meaning that you just crossed over from valued customer to a liability. And from there, it gets worse. So if your bank or credit union belongs to the check system network, as about 80% of the nation's financial institutions do, a record of that account closure will be promptly entered into the check system database, where it will remain for 5 years, warning banks, lenders, and even potential employers that you could be a credit risk. Now, you may never hear the name check systems until you try to open a checking account elsewhere and you're turned down. Again and again and again, at which point this altogether unassuming consumer reporting company can seem like the devil incarnate, out to ruin your credit rating, your reputation, and even your life. And it can haunt you for years. Now, on the one hand, it does serve a very good legitimate service, in that it's supposed to be a record-keeping system of exactly how responsible you are with bank transactions. On the other hand, you can find yourself on the database, and when you go to the grocery store, they won't honor your check. Now, how can you save yourself from 5 years in financial purgatory? Well, there's now a way, even if you ended up in the check system by your own hand. But first, let's meet check systems. After all, better the devil you know than the devil you don't know. Very few financial topics, with the exception of an ATM surcharge, have raised the public ire to the degree that check systems has in recent years. Opponents to the check system tend to fall into two camps. Those who ended up on the database legitimately, but they feel that their five-year sentence is too stiff, and those who erroneously found their way onto the check systems list and had a whale of a time getting off of it. Now, Lisa Nelson, the Chief Privacy Officer for parent company eFunds, feels most of the media heat. In January of 2001, the Deluxe Corporation, a major check printer, spun off eFunds, its transaction-oriented business that includes check systems, the Scan Check Verification Network, and the Debit Bureau, which combines bank-fed and merchant-fed databases into an extensive risk management system. Nelson says that as a consumer reporting agency, Check Systems compiles the facts on closed-for-cause accounts for some 90,000 bank and credit union locations nationwide and makes this data available to its members. Check System is regulated by the Fair Credit Reporting Act in much the same manner as credit bureaus. Now, controlling checking costs is the primary reason for the existence of check systems, and banks rely on check systems primarily to help them screen applicants for new accounts, especially checking accounts. Checking accounts don't generate very much money for banks. Many institutions offer them free in hopes of enticing you to invest in more lucrative products. But issued indiscriminately, checking accounts can expose the bank to considerable fraud and eat into profitability. According to a September 2000 report by Tower Group, financial institutions were hit for an estimated $1.3 billion in check fraud in 1998. Merchants lost an estimated $13 billion to bad checks that very same year. Now, since past account problems are considered a key predictor of potential risk, many member banks will deny an account based on a check systems report. Now, in these scenarios, the customer frequently considers check system the bad guy, even though it has nothing to do with any decision that a financial institution might make based upon information that check system has in its database. The data that is stored within the check systems is factual, accurate data. It's what happened. Now, how the bank uses that information is completely at their discretion. Check system has nothing to do with determining whether or not to close your account or deny you an account. Just because there's an account closure on file in check systems is not an automatic decline at every bank. Each financial institution sets its own parameters. So why is everybody yelling then at check systems? Well, two reasons. It seems egregious that a few overdrafts theoretically could land you on a blacklist for 5 years. And once on that list, it can be nearly impossible to get off of it. Here again, both problems reside primarily with the banks, not check system. The bank decided to close your account based upon its own policy and procedures, not check systems. It and other banks are perfectly free to give you a second chance, and although check systems asks its members to remove inaccurate entries and note when an outstanding debt has been paid, banks are under no obligation to show you this small kindness. So blaming check systems for preventing you from obtaining a checking account is a bit like blaming the TV weatherman for the weather. They just report it and are rightly focused on maintaining the integrity of the information. The banking industry has responded to some degree by placing filters on the data that they draw out. For example, I may be an institution that doesn't want to see any closure files that were less than $100. Our approach has been not to impact the data itself. If you want to make that change in how you use that data, that is every bank and credit union's prerogative. We're only removing inaccurate reports. So if you happened upon its list by error, CheckSystem will help you square things with your bank and remove you from the database. Contact CheckSystem through its customer service website, where most can order a consumer report for an $8 fee. Connecticut residents pay $5, Maine residents $3, Colorado, Georgia, Maryland, Massachusetts, New Jersey, and Vermont receive free reports. Now, early parole from purgatory is where you want to get. Those who wound up on the CheckSystem database legitimately once had limited options. The company allows you to insert an explanatory note to explain extenuating circumstances, but it will not delete or alter a factual listing unless instructed to do so by the closing bank. Otherwise, you could hunt for a non-CheckSystem bank, try your luck with an online bank, or have friends or relatives cash your checks for you. But times have changed in the banking industry. Today, banks compete for your business, and they don't want to turn you down, but neither do they want to entrust a low-margin product to a high-risk customer. So to help its member financial institutions resolve this dilemma and to take a little heat off of themselves, CheckSystem recently joined with consumer advocates, credit counselors, and a University of Wisconsin pilot program to develop a service called About Checking. The goal, give those on the blacklist an opportunity for early parole from purgatory by enabling them to earn back their checking account. So if a consumer is on our closure database, they can go to a class, and if they successfully complete the class and pay off all of their outstanding debts to the financial institution where the account was originally closed, then they're able, through a participating bank or credit union, to open up a new account and basically have a second chance. Now, the national program has rolled out in 15 states so far, and it'll be some relief to CheckSystem when it can offer an alternative to its 5-year mandatory sentence for folks who just plain made a mistake. Now, credit reports originally began with somebody who would actually go and interview your employer and your neighbors, and not only talk about your ability to borrow and repay, but also your character. That was all kind of phased out, and we took the whole character thing out of it. We're now trying to put that back in. Now, according to Rhodes, some of the 15 to 20% of the population that routinely mangles checkbooks actually need the kind of wake-up call that CheckSystem delivers. As funny as it sounds, it actually is more of an advantage to you to have that happen because you may never look at your credit report. He says most people are unaware that a negative credit report or low credit score actually increases your cost and access to things like car insurance. The insurance companies use your credit report as an indicator of insurability. Now, there's is a whole bunch of people who just have never had a fundamental understanding of even how the banking system works. We're taking that opportunity very seriously, and I think we can make an impact in the consumer population in terms of managing their debt and their debit account, because the better job we can do in terms of educating consumers, the better we're serving our customers, and it's a good thing to do. Why didn't we learn that in school? Where are the public schools in this problem of bad checks? They taught us how to write checks. Why didn't they teach us how to count? Well, let's see. We've got to take another break. We'll be back and we'll take a look at the last two items called the debit card fees sneak up on shoppers right after this. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to my website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Well, the fourth way that Congress has given banks an opportunity to sneak up on shoppers and steal from them is debit card fees. More banks are tacking on point-of-sale fees of as much as $1.50 and aren't adequately warning customers, and some groups say, watch your bank statement to find out. Now, swipe your debit card at the checkout register, and there's an increasing chance that more than the purchase price and tax is going to be subtracted from your checking account. A fee for using the debit card also may be deducted. Debit card fees have been around for a long time, but they used to be rare. Now they're much more common. The catch is that the fee is assessed only if you treat the purchase as a debit and then use your PIN number to authorize the transaction. Press the credit key sign, or credit key, and then sign your name on the receipt and no fee is charged to you. That is, press the credit key and then sign your name on the receipt when you use your debit card and no fee is charged. Using a PIN number will cost you. In a survey by the New York Public Interest Research Group, 89% of the banks surveyed tack on a point-of-sale fee of anywhere from 10 cents to $1.50 for a PIN-based debit transaction. While the survey looked only at New York area banks, people all around the country are finding these debit card fees on their bank statements. Just as with credit cards, retailers usually pay a fee for the processing of a debit card transaction. And the New York Bankers Association says a flat fee of 7.5 cents to 10 cents is paid when the PIN is used and the transaction is processed online. If the customer signs for the purchase, it's processed offline, and the fee can be up to 2% of the transaction. It's easy to see why many banks, which receive a significant chunk of that fee, want consumers to press credit and then sign for their debit card purchases. Customers who sign the receipt not only aren't charged a fee, they often qualify for some sort of a perk, such as free air miles. Use your PIN and all you get is your grocery bill and a fee. Now, a question of disclosure. At issue is whether the debit card fees are adequately disclosed. The Senate Banking, Housing, and Urban Affairs Committee has expressed concern that consumers may not be aware of the fees until it's too late. In other words, not until they see it on their monthly statement. So as a result, the Federal Reserve is taking a look at debit card fee disclosure and is giving the public a chance to voice their gripes. Banks are required to disclose the fee and the information you receive when you get a debit card. The fee is also on your monthly activity statement. But unlike at ATMs, where you're notified that a fee will be imposed with the transaction, there is no such notice on a debit keypad at the point of sale. Nessa Fettes, senior federal counsel at Washington, D.C.-based American Bankers Association, says the current disclosure rules are adequate. I just don't see how people can miss them. If you miss the first one, you'll see it on your periodic statement. It's hard to see how you can make them any more explicit, he said. Fetis indicates that it could be a long time before point-of-sale devices will be able to tell a customer whether they're going to be charged a fee or how much that fee is going to be. Isn't that just real special? The system isn't set up that way. The system would have to have access to everybody's account, and the network doesn't know whether my account is charged for a point-of-sale transaction or not. All that the merchant gets back when he submits a transaction is a yes or a no. The transaction is approved or declined. Point-of-sale machines are not smart machines. They're not as smart as ATMs. Ben Edmonds, he's the executive director of the Chicago-based Coalition for Consumer Rights, says point-of-sale machines should be upgraded if it's technologically feasible for them to have the fee information. The industry needs to set a goal. Say 10 years down the road, the units need to be replaced. Set a goal for that disclosure. In the short term, some kind of notice should be attached to the debit card reader alerting the customer that they are being charged a fee. Everyone gets penalized. And ironically, signing for a purchase to avoid the fee may end up costing consumers more money. Ed Merzwinski, Consumer Program Director at the U.S. Public Interest Research Group and a prominent critic of many of these fees imposed by banks, wants better disclosure, but says it's a two-sided issue. Disclosure will help the consumer save money, but it will lead to more signature-based debit, and that costs everyone more in the long run. So if you look at why they're charging the fee, it's not to make money, it's to drive you to this, it's to drive you to signing the receipt. They make more money. Not from you, but from the merchant. If more people use signature debit, the price of all goods and services for all customers is going to go up. Now, don't ever think that the merchant's paying anything. And furthermore, the merchant who pays that 5% point-of-sale transaction fee adds that into the price of his product. So whenever you're paying cash, you should ask the merchant for a 5% discount and then tell him you don't need a receipt and tell him you don't want to pay the sales tax. Let him pay it. The last item over here is debit cards are too risky for big purchases. And that's because if something goes awry, you may have a tough time getting your money back. Credit cards offer consumers more protection and peace of mind. Now, when you're making a big purchase, think twice about using a credit card in place of a debit card. If something goes wrong, you may have a tough time getting your money back with the debit card if you get the money back at all. Or because many merchants treat a debit card purchase in the same way they would a check or cash. And you may get stuck with several $100 in store credit instead of a refund of your money. Debit cards such as Visa check, MasterCard money, are linked to a cardholder's checking account and can be used to make purchases just about anywhere. Credit cards are accepted. But don't let the word Visa on the front of the card fool you. You don't have the same consumer protections with a debit card that you do with a credit card. It's not even close. Credit card is a cushion in case of a dispute. Credit cards offer you protection under the Fair Credit Billing Act. This law gives the consumer the right to withhold payment on poor quality or damaged merchandise purchased with a credit card. It's wonderful. It's a great law there, says E. Thomas Garman of the In Charge Institute. It's a nonprofit education and credit counseling group. You've got Visa on your side, and under the law, you do need to make a real effort to resolve the dispute with a merchant before you can ask your issuer to stop a credit card payment. There are a few other catches as well. The sale must be for more than $50 and have taken place in your home state or within 100 miles of your home address. However, very few issuers enforce the $50 or 100-mile rule on purchases that are made in the United States. No one's following that rule in this country. That's crazy, Garman says. I've heard of no one ever using that. So with a credit card, you have the option of withholding payment should you be unsatisfied with the quality of an item. Ditto for an item purchased with a personal check. You simply call your bank and ask them to stop payment before the check clears. Now that isn't going to last very much longer. The end of this month. Now, it's a different money matter. With a debit card, which yanks money from your bank account immediately, there's a good chance the merchant already has your money by the time you realize something's wrong with the purchase, so you have a lot less leverage. Now, as long as you have your receipt, you may have a case under the state's unfair trade practices law. But pursuing that course could prove costly and very time-consuming. So you're pretty much stuck trying to resolve the dispute with a merchant on your own. And it could go on for weeks. Or, when it's all said and done, you may not get your money back. The merchant may want to make some other arrangement, like a store credit or a gift certificate or something else. That isn't exactly like putting money back in your account. Now, what kind of federal protections do you have with a credit card? Well, under the Electronic Fund Transfer Act, you have the right to dispute an error on your bank statement, and you have some protections if your credit card is lost or stolen. Debit cards can leave you on the hook, and it's not as bad if you act fast. You see, your liability is capped at $50 if you notify your bank within 2 days of finding out that your credit card is missing, or excuse me, your debit card is missing. But if you wait more than 2 days, and you could lose as much as $500. Now, if you discover an unauthorized charge on a bank statement, you may be on the hook for as much as $500, providing you contact your bank within 60 days. Now, if you wait longer than 60 days, you're stuck paying every cent of the thief's spending spree. You could lose everything in your checking and overdraft accounts. The banking industry has stepped forward and capped consumer liability on unauthorized signature-based debit card purchases to $50, the same limit that exists under federal law for credit cards. So while a voluntary cap is certainly nice, an ironclad law would do us much better. The industry is doing that out of a sense of fair play, out of the goodness of their hearts, Hograth says. They could change that policy tomorrow. Now, because of more limited consumer protections, a debit card may be the best choice for smaller routine purchases such as gas or groceries. Paying a debit card is quick and convenient, and you won't pay a penny of interest. You also won't enjoy the float that you have when you write a check or pay by credit card. With a debit card purchase, the money is taken out of your account immediately, so it's important to keep good records. Forget to write a debit card purchase or two in your checkbook, and you could end up paying some hefty account fees. It's deducted almost instantaneously. So there better be sufficient funds in that account, says Gwen Reichbach, executive director of the National Institute for Consumer Education. And if you decide to make a larger purchase on a debit card, it's best to do it at a store that lets you inspect the merchandise thoroughly before buying. All right, so much for the banks and the Congress. Let me give you a reminder here that these politically incorrect opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the staff, or the management of the network or of this radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to the website georgegordon.org or call the Law School Direct at 417-273-4967. Well, there's the signal. It says my time is up, so I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.